when it came to going out on my own and being like a freelance creator and kind of doing everything independently, I remember I wanted to do it a few years ago and they were like, we honestly don't think you're ready. And then the next week I was doing backstage interviews and behind the scenes footage at Coachella. And then the day after Coachella, I was doing that at the MTV Movie Awards. And it was all of these things that I could never have dreamed of. I don't feel like I'm in a good place. I don't feel like I can do this indefinitely, and I need to get out. I launched Dating Sucks for Hinge in the beginning of the pandemic, actually. Literally one episode was recorded in person in a studio, and then the next week the world shut down. And this is the big plot twist, was at the same time I thought I had the most job security in the world. I was the face of the fucking brand on social media. Everyone knew me as Alana from Hinge.
Right.
I got let go. And I was like, okay, you know what? I'm going to give myself like 6 months to figure it out and see if I can make this work and see if I can figure out how to be a podcaster, be a content creator.
Hey guys, it's Dan. Welcome back to another episode of Grow. Today's guest is Alana Dunn, the 27-year-old host of the dating podcast Seeing Other People. She's taken the dating world by storm, amassing 1 million downloads on her podcast and landing sponsor deals left and right. But Alana's path to becoming an entrepreneur and a creator are very unique. She was let go at her dream job and had to pull herself back up in order to realize that she was just being held back by that role. We talked about everything from paving your own way in your career to how what it takes to become a full-time creator and why vulnerability is a superpower. Come join us for an absolutely epic conversation. I enjoyed having Alana beyond belief on this podcast, and I can't wait for you to meet her. So without further ado, my name is Dan Russo, and this is Grow, the podcast where each week we bring on entrepreneurs, creators, and other inspiring guests to help you grow into the best version of yourself. All right, Alana, how are you today?
I'm great. How are you, Dan?
I'm doing well. Look, I've been looking forward to this interview really since we booked it, because in my mind, your story is actually very similar to mine. And in that, I'm actually taking my first dip into the creator, you know, pool myself, right? You're someone who's been doing this for just about a year now, I think, right? I think you just passed your year anniversary.
Year anniversary of doing it totally on my own, yes.
Awesome. And I've been so looking forward to this, and we're going to dig into exactly what that term creator means, etc. But first, I want to start with you, where I start with all my guests, which is, who is Alana? Where are you from? And kind of what was the environment that you were created in, you know, as a kid?
Yeah, so I am Alana Dunn. I'm 27 years old. I currently live in New York City, and I am the host of the podcast Seeing Other People. But beyond that, I am somebody who has kind of been through a lot of things in my personal life, in my dating life, that inspired me to create. And I grew up really like being encouraged to do what felt right for me in terms of like expressing myself and being creative. And my mom is actually an artist, and so I think I got some of that creativity passed down to me. And it first really started for me when my dad was always taking pictures with his like DSLR camera. And one day, he always says, one day I took his camera and never gave it back to him. And so for me, it was really about like photography and capturing moments and like making people's experiences memorable and giving them something that they could like take away from it. And that like photo journey kind of turned into a film videography journey, where I started to capture moments that weren't just still, like they were dynamic. There was actually more going on. And I really just used it as a way to storytell. And so, yeah, I studied television, radio, film in college and music business. And I ended up combining my loves for like my camera and music and storytelling, and worked in the music industry for a while, and then ended up in the dating world creating my own content to kind of help people be their best selves. And that is my journey.
That's awesome. We're going to dig into a lot of that because there's some jumps there. There's some gaps that I want to fill in for people. So, but you started by saying that you obviously had a very creative upbringing, right? Your parents were both artistic, your dad with a camera, your mom's an artist. How big of an influence have they been on, you know, not only your artistry, but also encouraging you to kind of, you know, take maybe risks in your career?
Yeah, they've been incredible. And I really don't think I would have been able to do it without their support. I mean, and even it goes back to like when I was younger, like they just let me be so expressive. And like I had so much freedom to express myself. Like I had Jonas Brothers posters over every single inch of my wall. And like the fact that they let me do that kind of empowered me to do things that maybe were a little bit riskier or people might judge me for. And so in when it came to going out on my own and being like a freelance creator and kind of doing everything independently, I remember I wanted to do it a few years ago and they were like, we honestly don't think you're ready. Like you don't have enough life skills. Like you haven't been in the business world long enough to figure it out. And like, they were totally right. And I'm glad that they saw that and that they knew that and that they were open about that. They weren't holding me back, but they were like, they wanted me to be cautious and they were right. And then when it came time again for me to consider doing it, they were like, you can absolutely do it. Like, you know exactly what you're doing now and like, go for it. So that's been really, really great. And I'm really lucky to have that.
That's awesome. And especially to have your parents as kind of like, you know, help stewarding you a little bit, right? Like kind of helping you steer the ship or advising where you should steer the ship. That's awesome because, you know, especially in hindsight, if you felt like you weren't ready, it's great to have parents that not only support you, but will also tell you the truth, even if you don't want to hear it.
Exactly. You know,
it's really important to have people in your life like that. I've got one friend in mind that I'm thinking of right now that even if it's an uncomfortable truth, he'll tell me it. And I like always appreciate him. And that's why he's my best friend, because he'll always, you know, tell you what he thinks, even if, you know, he's been wrong at times. Right. Or we don't agree eye to eye on it. But he always, you know, comes through in that moment. And my parents are very similar to yours in that they, you know, very supportive and you know, also will, you know, help you steward if you ask for the advice, right? Or if they see that you need to do something or maybe you shouldn't go in that direction, they'll kind of steward you as well. You said that you studied radio, TV, and film in college and kind of mixed that with music business. I was really similar, minus the business part. I actually studied multi-platform journalism. So we can maybe geek out a little bit over different cameras and storytelling, you know, methods and things like that. But, you know, for the sake of the viewers, though, why don't you dig into what exactly that major helped you do and what skill sets you got out of it and how you translated that into the beginning of your career?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm so grateful that that is the route that I went down in college. I actually originally applied as a photojournalism major, and that's what I entered in as a freshman. And after my first photography class, I kind of had this feeling of like, I'm already good at this. I don't need a degree to take pictures. And yes, I could be better at it, I'm sure, but I feel like I'm here for 4 years and there's a lot more I could get out of this. And so I tried my first television, radio, film class in that major and I was like, yep, done. Amazing. And it came time to pick a minor, which I like had to do. And I had never thought about music as a career path, even though other than like photography, like music was my absolute passion in life. And like what I think back to my childhood and I think about like the concerts I went to with the friends I made through the bands that I loved. So like I was literally looking down a list of all of the minors at my school and I was like, oh my God, we have one of the best music business programs in the country. Like, why did I never think that could be a career path? And so I took that on. And instantly it became about combining these two things, my camera and music. And I mentioned the Jonas Brothers earlier, and they were really how I like fell in love with music because I felt so connected to them and their story and their journey. And so I decided I wanted to help other fans fall in love with music the same way I did by feeling connected to their favorite artists and bands. And by doing that through content creation and through filming all of these little moments that happen at shows or backstage or in their daily lives. And so that's really what I decided I wanted to do. And I took on every single possible internship, like side gig, everything that I could possibly do, because I just wanted to be like 150% in. And it was an absolutely incredible experience. I think I had I had the best like undergraduate job experience, life experiences that I couldn't even have dreamed of. And it was absolutely incredible. And then I graduated and I got a job at one of the biggest record labels in the world, and I was miserable.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow. We have to come back to that in a second, but I'd be remiss if I asked you, what was the best experience or your favorite experience from those internships? Was it meeting a famous person, celebrity? Like, what was it?
I actually did meet Nick Jonas for the first time through, I was interning at iHeartRadio out in LA for Kiss FM, and it was a Grammys pre-show, and I was doing backstage interviews, and he was one of the artists. And it was like doing that. And then the next week I was doing backstage interviews and behind the scenes footage at Coachella. And then the day after Coachella, I was doing that at the MTV Movie Awards. And it was all of these things that I could never have dreamed of. And I was just getting to do them. And the cool thing was that like they weren't things that were just like handed to me. We're like, okay, I got the cool internship and like now I'm doing all these things. It was like I went to my boss and I said, I want to be there. Like, can you use an extra set of hands? Like, how can I be involved in this day? Yep. And I think they were really impressed with that. And they were like, oh my God, absolutely. We'll take all the help we can get. But I would not have gone to Coachella or the Grammys pre-show or the MTV Movie Awards had I not asked and had I not really wanted to do that.
That's so interesting. And I love that one of your favorite moments was meeting Nick Jonas. I actually had a Jonas Brother moment myself. I wasn't a particularly huge fan of them growing up, but I knew who they were. I guess I'm not their demographic. But
you're a Jersey boy now.
I am. I'm a Jersey boy now. So they're Jersey guys. You know, I was actually on the phone at one point with Joe Jonas. My old boss was an investor in an app that he was trying to do. It was like a trivia pop culture app. It didn't do very well. But still got a lot of love for Joe. He was a nice guy on the phone. I have to ask you because, you know, you display a very clear like entrepreneurial mindset within those internships that you were just mentioning, right? To be able to take, you know, an idea, right, pitch it to your boss and then get the yes from your boss to be able to go and do these things, right, to pitch yourself like that. It takes a very entrepreneurial mindset, spirit, etc. Do you believe that you can be an entrepreneur within an organization or do you believe that you have to kind of be like a founder or a freelancer in order to kind of have that entrepreneurial label?
I think you can absolutely be an entrepreneur within an organization, but you have to know that you're going to get told no like 110 times before you're told one yes. Mm. And that's definitely happened to me. I mean, that was probably one of the reasons I felt so kind of creatively stunted at that first job at a record label, because I had all these ideas. I had so much like energy and desire to do more and to be like taking my job and the access I had in that position and making the absolute most out of it. And that's just not what they wanted. They wanted me to just kind of get through my day, get my projects done, and not do more than that, not give more than that. And so the number of times I had ideas and I went to my boss and told them my ideas and they were like, that's honestly amazing, but like, it's just never going to happen. Yeah. That was so disappointing and hard for me to swallow. And so what I ended up doing was I ended up going out on my own, and in my spare time that I didn't have, but I made, I took on all these side gigs. I wanted to learn how to manage a band so that I could understand what the other side of that was, like what managers were thinking and why they were making the decisions that they were making. So I went and did that on the side in, like I said, the spare time I didn't have, but I made because it was important to me. And so I think that's a big thing where it's like, you might not be told like, yes, you can do this here, but then if you go out and do it and learn the skills and make it work, then when the time and the situation is better and you bring it back up and you're like, I've already done this thing, let's integrate it into what we're already doing, it might be a yes.
Absolutely. No, I love how you look at kind of like opportunity cost, where you don't just, if something's not within your immediate wheelhouse, right, you don't completely dismiss it. You're like, you know what, whether this is good or bad experience, right, it's still experience. And I'm sure that this will come into play, you know, whether it's how I think it will or not, in the future somehow, some way, right? And I feel like I have had that come into play with, you know, tasks that I didn't want to do, right? Like I had to perform administrative tasks at one of my first full-time roles for my boss, and I just didn't think that it was worth my time a lot of the times. And perhaps it wasn't, but eventually I was able to get away from that. And maybe the, you know, administrative tasks were honestly, they taught me how to you know, build relationships, maintain relationships, to communicate in the business world. So they were important. I just couldn't see it as a cocky 22-year-old.
Yeah. I mean, I was told going into the music industry, it's like, you are going to be an assistant. That's it. You're going to be an assistant to somebody. That is where you start. And I was like, I knew not only would I hate being an assistant, but I'd be terrible at it. And I was like, I was like, no, challenge accepted. I'm going to be the one that is not an assistant. And I didn't apply for assistant jobs. It took a little bit longer for me to get a job, but I ended up getting a job where I was actually using my video editing and photography and filming skills and using those rather than being an assistant. And though it didn't turn out the way I wanted, it still, like, to me was worth kind of jumping through those hoops.
Absolutely. So talk to me a little bit about this first job. It sounds like you felt you had this incredible college internship experience, right? You had this incredible major matched with your music minor in business. Talk to me a little bit about, it sounds like you got a little deflated once you actually got your first role. So talk to me a little bit about what was deflating about it, and you know what and how you eventually got out of that.
Yeah, so I think when we're learning all of this stuff and we're doing internships and we're kind of getting our foot in the door at different companies, it's like everything is so exciting and it seems like there's so many possibilities, and you're sitting in classes and you're hearing from alumni who are now at like the top of their field, and it's like, oh my God, like that's gonna be me the day I walk out of here, and like I'm gonna get a job and I'm gonna be this person who's doing all of these things. And the reality is, like, you graduate, you're 21, 22 years old, and you get an entry-level job where you're doing entry-level things and you're in entry-level rooms, and you don't get to do all of those things that you thought you were going to get to do and that you were excited about and the things that were hyped up to you. It's like those people did this entry-level stuff too for a while and worked their way up. And while I knew that, it's still, I think, because of the experiences I had in my internships and the things I was able to do in them, I felt like there was just more waiting around the corner for me. And then when I got there, it's like I was doing the same things, if not less, than what I was doing as an unpaid intern, you know? And it was just really kind of soul-sucking after a while. I mean, like, I loved the team I was on. Like, I had amazing bosses and stuff. And there are a million good things I can say about my team and the company. But I just felt like I was being trained to, like, be a monkey that just, like, showed up, did the work, like, crossed things off the to-do list, then put new things on the to-do list, then crossed those off. And, like, that was it. And, like, I would have all these ideas, and I just wasn't able to do them because it's like, in order to get anything done, like 150 people have to say yes over like a year long period. And it was just, it was really, really draining and exhausting and disappointing. And so I did what I always did, which was say, okay, how can I accomplish what I want and do the things I want outside of this job? Because those are the things that are going to fuel me and keep me going and keep me excited and passionate. And so I wanted to, like I said, I wanted to manage a band. I found a band and ended up managing them. And then I was booking shows. I was getting them interviews. I was helping them with like releases. I was like doing all their social content. Like I was doing all of it. And it reminded me why I was in it and why I was there. And so that kept me going for a while and things like that. And even like it came time for like Z100's Jingle Ball, and I had interned there before, and I was still in touch with the people I worked with. And so I reached out to them. I was like, you guys don't have to pay me. Like, I just want to come help. And they were like, okay. And so there I was again backstage, like filming interviews with Taylor Swift and Ariana Grande and the Jonas Brothers. And like, yeah, I wasn't getting a penny from it. Like I was literally volunteering like free labor, but like, I didn't care. It was what excited me and what made me feel like this is why I'm doing this. Yeah, I stayed at this job for about 2 years, and by the end of it, I think the last 6 months, like, I was really in a bad place. I just was so over it, and I think day by day, I was learning more and more about how kind of toxic of an industry it was. And and that, like, even my coworkers, like, I'm sitting there, I'm 22 or 23 now. My coworkers who were like 29, 30 were still living paycheck to paycheck. And I'm like, this is not what I want for myself.
Yeah.
Like, this is absolutely not what I want. And yes, I know that there are people who do make a lot of money in music, but the chances of that happening are like 0.0001%. And I don't feel like I'm in a good place. I don't feel like I can do this indefinitely, and I need to get out. And so I was kind of at a crossroads where I knew I wanted to leave, but I had no idea what I was going to do, because I never, once I got into the music industry, I was like, I'm never leaving.
Right.
So I just knew that, like, I wanted to be in the music industry to help people. And so what else is there I can do using my skills that I have, my video editing skills, my photography, my videography, whatever I learned, like, how can I use that to help people, maybe in a different way? And I'm not going to lie, like, I also applied to like 150 jobs that I could not care less about, but I just wanted to get out. Like, I was so desperate to get out that I would have taken any job as that stepping stone out.
Yep.
But I did end up getting, the timing worked out really well that when I was applying to jobs, Hinge posted that they were looking for a video and content producer and someone to do all of their social content, be the face of the brand on social media.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, I'm also in a really fucking terrible place with my love life right now. And if I can make content about dating that will help people and maybe prevent them from feeling how I feel, how great would that be?
Yeah.
And so I applied. I went through a crazy intense round of interviews, and I ended up getting it.
That's incredible. Wow. I mean, to be able to go from something that you really don't want, right, to applying to a multitude of jobs just to get anything to get out, to then landing what sounds like it was maybe not a role that you envisioned for yourself, but something that it seems like the way that you were just talking about it, like you were super passionate about, you know, the applying and then also obviously getting and doing the job at Hinge. So, I mean, that's just an incredible journey to go on. And talk about self-awareness too, being able to realize that, you know, as a 23-year-old looking ahead at your coworkers that are 29 and 30, even just in the short-term future, right? Like that is your short-term future, unless something, you know, completely outlandish happens, which, you know, may or may not have, because you were clearly an outlier. But I think you saw sort of where you would have been in that 5 or 6 years if you had kind of kept on that trajectory. So, I mean, that's incredible self-awareness to have, you know, too. And it's interesting that you mentioned, you know, this video producer role. So what drew you to that, you know, being that maybe, you know, you're obviously, you know, a personality interviewing Ariana Grande, Taylor Swift, etc. Was it kind of a marriage of, you know, where you were in your dating life as well as your past, you know, interviewing experience that really drew you to that role in the first place?
So the funny thing, and I should have kind of clarified this before, like when I was interviewing these people, I wasn't actually, most of the times I was not the interviewer. There were times where I was the interviewer, mostly off camera. There were like 4 times where I was the interviewer on camera. I had literally little to no on camera experience.
Wow.
And this Hinge job was a lot of on camera.
Yeah.
And like, look, when I saw the job, I kind of was like, you know what? Like, I'm the friend that all my friends come to for dating advice or when they have something going on in their dating lives. Not necessarily because I have the best advice, but because I want to listen. I want to help them. And they know that I want to care about it and really make sure that, like, they're doing okay. And anything I can do to help them and support them in it, like, I'm all in. And so when I saw this job, I was like, I am going to get this job. Like, I'm going to do whatever it takes. And, like, this is kind of just for anyone out there who sees any job posting that they are interested in. Like, there are so many things that you can do to set yourself up for success and at least get your foot in the door. My cover letter, I made my cover letter a Hinge profile.
That's great.
And you know what? It worked. It worked. They had like over 1,000 applications of actual like written cover letters that were sent as a PDF. And then they open one and it's literally a Hinge profile. And they're like, okay, now this girl has our attention. And so, yeah. But when I got there, I was actually, I mean, like, there were 2 videos I had to make in the interview process. And I put a lot of effort into them. Like, I had a friend help me. I probably redid them 27 times before I actually like sent them in, but it worked. And I got there and they were like, okay, like you're here, go do. And I'm like, go do what? And they're like, just like like come up with ideas, try them out, make some videos. Like, and I was like, wait, what? And I was so thrown off because for the first time in 2 years, somebody was asking me to be creative and to use my ideas and actually just do them. And it was a really hard transition. I think I remember like the first like 3 months, like once a week, I was crying to my boss in the stairwell because I didn't know what to do. And she's like, Alana, you have to step it up. And I just had to retrain my brain to have ideas and then figure out how to go from ideating to executing. And it was a really tough thing for me to realize, like, oh my God, I forgot how to be creative because I was so creatively stunted for the last few years. And it was tough, but it ended up, obviously, like I put my all into it and ended up being the most incredible experience.
I mean, that's absolutely incredible to go from what you just said right there encapsulates, I think, what a lot of people feel, which is you weren't asking to be creative. You were being asked to be creative in the first 2 years of your job. And, you know, for a lot of people, it's a lot more than that. Right. And so to have this like kind of step back moment of, wait, you want me to go like just kind of have free reign, just go figure something out and then present it to you. It's like, it's kind of mind boggling. I feel as though I had that when I transitioned from my first full-time role. I was there for about 3 years. I worked for an angel investor and then I joined a high growth media startup. They essentially, it was not night and day because there was a lot of figuring out stuff for the first role, but the second role, it was a little bit more sort of like open field. I could be a little bit more creative in a business sense, right? I had a little bit more say in terms of the vision, the business development, how we were going to actually go to the day-to-day of those things, right? I was leading projects, timelines, etc. And it was a lot of fun. And I hadn't had that injection of fun in my workday in a long time because things just became formulaic. It became just, you know, a routine, etc. And so it's so great to hear that you had that opportunity to break out of it, you know, through a company as well. So talk to me a little bit more about some of the things that you did at Hinge that were a challenge, right? Like what was your, I'm assuming that you didn't have a normal day to day, especially from what you just described, but I would love to hear just a little bit more about like, what was some of the things that you were being asked to do? I think I saw that you were making a podcast there, that you were obviously the face of their social media. What does that mean?
So what my role entailed was creating all the social content for the Hinge accounts, creating like Instagram story content that was going to engage people and help them, and also creating like a lot of video content of me talking about different topics in dating. And so I created a bunch of different series. So like I had a series called Why Though, where I like every, let's say like Monday, I posted a video and a story segment about like, why do people do X thing? Like, why do people ghost? Why are we all afraid of commitment? Like, why are we afraid to communicate? Things like that. And so I had like a series called We Have History, where every week I talked about some like how we got to where we are in the dating world now and why things are the way we are and why we act the way we are when it comes to dating based on historical events, historical like patterns, things in culture over the years. So I had a series like that for each day of the week, and those were all video content. I also was making memes, tweets, like motivational posts, posts with dating advice. I was also interacting with people. Basically, like my goal was to make people feel like Hinge gets it, like dating is hard. And they're not just saying like, here's a dating app, go figure it out. It's like, they're also like in this with us. Right. And so I really, really like loved doing all of it because, well, let me back up. When I first got there, I kind of made a rule for myself where I was like, my personal life, my dating life is off limits. I can talk about dating all day long, but I'm not going to talk about my actual dating life and what I've experienced and what's happened to me and what's currently happening in it. Like, that is not happening. And that was kind of something where like, I just decided that for myself. I put my foot down about it. Everyone was supportive. They're like, sure, totally. Like, you're right. Great. Good. And for the first year, it was kind of like that. And then I was going through a breakup and I recorded this video like literally right after my ex and I had like said goodbye, like final breakup. Like I had recorded this video a few hours later about how I was like really struggling through this. And I know I'm always giving advice and people are always asking me questions, but like, I want advice. Like, how did you guys get through like the first like hard days of a breakup? And I kind of sat with it for about a month. I didn't post it. I didn't show anybody at the company. And then one day I showed my two bosses and they were like, Alana, this is incredible. Like, this is amazing. But you don't have to do this if you don't want to. And I was like, I really appreciate you saying that, but I do want to. And I did it. And the response that I got to that video was like 20 times any other piece of content that I had ever posted. And people were like, thank you for doing this. It makes me feel so much less alone knowing that you're also going through this, or that knowing that how I felt in that moment, like I wasn't crazy and I wasn't the only person feeling this. And it was this like huge light bulb moment where I was like, oh my God, like if I actually open up about what I've been through and how I'm feeling and how hard it is, like that's what's going to help people more than me just saying like, yeah, people ghost because of this, don't ghost. Here's what to say instead of ghosting, like stuff like that. And so that is what I started to do. I started to really be open about what I had been through and how it impacted me and how much dating anxiety I had. And it just really helps people feel like they were not the only ones going through it. And so from there, I decided like, okay, I'm doing this in like 1 minute videos, 3 minute videos, but like how much more helpful would it be if we could do this in a podcast episode? And so I went to my boss and said, I want to start a podcast. And my boss was like, okay, go start a podcast. And so I launched Dating Sucks for Hinge in the beginning of the pandemic, actually. Literally one episode was recorded in person in a studio. And then the next week the world shut down and it was it was like, oh, do we do Dating Sucks or do we wait like the few weeks for the pandemic to pass? And thank God I was like, let's do it. And it instantly was like this moment of like, this is what I want to do. And this is what I love. And this is what feels fulfilling. And this is what helps people the way I set out to help people. And I absolutely loved it. And it was super successful from a business standpoint. And I just knew that like, I wanted to do as much of it as I could. And so here I am.
Something that's been consistent throughout this entire interview is that you put helping people and sort of like success first. It didn't necessarily matter what kind of format you were doing it in. It seems like those were always the two goals that were leading you. And it didn't really necessarily matter the context in which you were doing it. Obviously, I think eventually, you know, you did find the context that you wanted to do it in, right? In the dating world, you know, with Hinge to start off with, and obviously through podcasting. But if you hadn't led with, you know, those two missions in mind, right? Being successful and then helping other people, you probably would have never gotten there. And so I think that's a really important key piece for people to understand in your story. Something else that you just said there too is that you realize that vulnerability and authenticity were kind of like this light bulb moment, like the key to, you know, helping other people by sharing your story from a really authentic place. And I've heard so many other creators, whether they be YouTubers, Instagrammers, you know, whatever platform you want to put them on, say the same thing, that it's like a light bulb moment, that if you actually, you know, open yourself up and you become authentic and you share perhaps maybe not everything, but, you know, certain pieces of, you know, your very personal life, that is actually what hits home with people and can actually increase, you know, I don't want to make it a bit about vanity, but, you know, it'll also what'll help, you know, perhaps, you know, your content perform better. Talk a little bit about, you know, what that vulnerability and authenticity, you know, means to you, not only while you were at Hinge, but as you've taken your leap, you know, into being your own, you know, freelance creator.
Yeah, well, I love that you pointed out that kind of the root of everything was to help people. And I think just before we jump ahead, I want to kind of emphasize that because, like, life is really hard and figuring out your career is really hard and getting like trying to get that next job, trying to get that raise, like whatever it is, like there's so many challenges that come with all of it. But I think for me, it was really like you said, like I knew why I was doing it and I knew what my purpose was in it. And I knew that even if it was hard, even if I wasn't instantly accomplishing what I set out to accomplish, it was still going to help somebody. And it was always accomplishing something, even if it helped like one person, even if a video didn't go viral, even if a podcast episode wasn't the most downloaded, like even if it was the least downloaded, but one person felt better because of it, or it resonated with one person because of something that they had been through 5 years ago or 5 days ago, like that is what will keep you going, you know, knowing why you're doing it and knowing your purpose in it. So I really am glad that you pointed that out, because that's something that I kind of wasn't thinking about or kind of had forgotten.
Where does that come from, that desire to help people? Is it just something that's part, that's innate to you, that's just like part of your DNA? Or do you think that you kind of learned that somewhere over the course of your life?
I think a little bit of both. I think I've always been like extra empathetic and compassionate, and always seen that like life is hard and like you never know what somebody's going through. Like even like, and like my dad's an incredible person, but like one example of something that comes to mind is like, we'll be like driving and someone will like cut him off and he'll be like, fucking asshole. And I'm like, maybe that person's having a really bad day. Like maybe somebody they know just died, or like they were just asked for a divorce. Like we have no idea why they cut you off. And like, let's give them the benefit of the doubt. So like, that's kind of how I've always approached life, is like, you really never know what someone has going on. And all you can do is like be kind and be understanding. And like, I would always get upset when like I would want to cancel plans because I was having a bad day and a friend would get upset with me for it. And it's like, you don't know how bad of a day I'm having, and it shouldn't matter. Like if I want to cancel a plan, like let me cancel the plan, because that is what I want, rather than feeling forced to be dragged to this plan, not in the mood for it, because I would have felt guilt, like you would have made me feel guilty for canceling. It's just like, life is really hard, and like all we can do is be kind to each other and be understanding to what the other person may or may not be going through. You know, we have no idea. So that's kind of, I think, where it all came from.
Absolutely. I mean, that's incredible too, because I think that, you know, empathy, and I think empathy can absolutely be learned, but like, I also think that there are some people who just have an innate sense of it. Not to toot my own horn, but I think that I also am a little bit like that. I think I have this, you know, innate compassion and empathy that I just, it's just part of my DNA. But at the same time, my parents have, you know, instilled that in me. You know, they just love to help people. You know, family and friends, they're the first ones who are always trying to step up. And I think that's also where, you know, that comes from, you know, in me. I got to see that, you know, over the course of 27 years. And that's why it's something that I've also, you know, hold near and dear to my heart. So it sounds like you had that, as well, through not only your support system, but also it's kind of tied into your DNA as well. Something you mentioned really interesting is like, you know, this thing of like canceling plans, right? And that's just to use it on like a, let's just like go like on a microscopic level to like kind of, you know, assert a larger point. But something that I've realized is that I don't owe anybody else, like, you know, my time or energy, etc., more than I owe it to myself. So I need to take care of me first, right? Like I need to be selfish in order to kind of like be selfless with what I have, right? Because if I'm not my best self, then I can't, you know, help other people in my best way, right? Yep. So one of the ways that I've been trying to do that more is if I'm tired, if, you know, whatever it might be, I'm trying not to overcommit myself. And it seems like that's something that you're, you know, also, you know, trying to do as well. And honestly, like sometimes like friendships that I honestly maybe have dwindled and I just don't put as much time or energy into anymore are the people that actually get upset when I you know, cancel. Luckily, I don't think that's really too many of my friends. Like 99.9% of them are great and understanding and et cetera. But like, I can certainly count like a couple people where I'm like, you know, maybe I just don't need to hang out with that person as much anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I even have a friend that I can think of who like, she got upset, I think 2 years ago, because I was literally dumped that morning by a guy who, like, we weren't like in a long-term relationship, but we had been seeing each other for like 3 months. That morning he ended things, and she was having like a holiday brunch, and I'm sitting on my couch hysterically crying, and I FaceTime her. I'm like, I love you, but like, I can't make it. And like, she's held that against me, and we're That's not close true. Friends anymore.
Yeah.
And like, it's like, if that's how you're going to act, if like, if you can't be empathetic and understanding to what somebody's going through because of your own priorities, like that's not, it's just not a way to be. But to go back to your previous question about authenticity and vulnerability, what I kind of realized while I was working at Hinge was like, in order for me to help people the most, like that's how I have to be. Like I have to fully lean in. And like, I still kept boundaries. Like I would never say the name of somebody. I would never give like intimate details about a date I had been on or an experience with somebody that would ever like put them in a compromising position. I made a rule for myself of like, I don't want anybody to not want to date me because of what I do. So I was able to still make it like, I was able to still be vulnerable and still be like my whole authentic self without throwing anybody else under the bus. But I also realized that, like, in order to not only in order to help people, but in order for people to actually be their best selves on a date and get into the relationship they want, they have to be vulnerable and authentic. And so for them to see me doing it, even though they could see it was hard, and it's obviously difficult to open up about things that have been like negative in the past and things that have hurt me, but to see me doing it and me kind of leading by example was like, okay, if Alana can do it, I can do it. And that's kind of always been my thing, where like, I don't want people to really think of me as a dating expert, even though technically I am. I don't want people to think of me as like an influencer, even though technically I am. I want people to think of me as like their friend who's in the trenches with them and who gets it. And like, if Alana can do it, so can they, because at the end of the day, like, I literally am just a person who has gone through a lot and has like wants to go, is going to go through a lot more, but like, I'm open about it so that other people can learn from what I've been through and maybe not make some of the mistakes I have.
Absolutely. You know, it's so interesting. You just made a really great point that even anyone who's had any sort of discernible amount of success, whether it be in the creator economy and they have a bunch of followers and a big audience, or whether they're, you know, monetarily successful, right? They've got, you know, hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars, or if they're successful in their career, they've got the title and, you know, the salary with it, etc. They're all still just human beings. Regardless of whatever that metric of success is, right? They still, you know, put their pants on like you and I do, right? They still are just human at the core of it. And I love that you are making the distinguishing factor between like, yeah, I have a podcast about dating that is absolutely successful. I have this following on social media that is larger than most. But at the end of the day, I'm still Alana Dunn. I am still, you know, a 27-year-old trying to figure the world out just like everybody else out there. And I think that ability to recognize that you do have this audience and this mission and this, you know, influence, right? But at the same time, knowing that you're still somebody who's just trying to figure it out, I think that kind of like, you know, humble ambition really balances you out a lot to a point where you can actually use that influence for the right reasons and for good. And so, you know, I'm glad that somebody like you has that influencing power. Talk about a little bit how you went from Hinge, right, and kind of this like epiphany of vulnerability to making the jump as your own, you know, entrepreneur, creator, etc. Because I'm really excited to hear about this. You know, was there a tipping point? Was it a slow realization? Talk to me about how you made that transition.
Yeah, I'm really glad you asked, because it's not what most people expect by any means. So After Dating Sucks came out, it was like a one season thing to start. We were it was getting renewed for a second season, but it was just, the process was so long. I had said before, like when I got to Hinge, it was like, okay, you're here, go do whatever. And they were still in startup mode and it was incredible. I had so much creative control. There was so much trust in me. But as companies grow, there are more and more people involved in decision making. And that really was what happened to me, where like when I started, I was like the 33rd employee at the entire company. Wow. And there's like almost 200 employees now, like three years later, whatever it is. And so as time went on, the creative process there became way more corporate. And I slowly started to feel like I was back at my first job, where I was able to have ideas but never see them through. Or I would have to jump through 10,000 hoops in order to make something happen. Or I had to convince people. Like I felt like every day I would wake up and go to work to like fight to do my job the way I knew was right. And so it was really frustrating, and it was really like exhausting and disappointing and soul sucking. And I started to lose passion for it. And I started to feel like, okay, like, well, that was a fun run. Like I did what I wanted for a little, but now it's just not going to happen that way. And so I was really, again, like kind of going into a bad place in terms of my career, where I felt like there was no hope, and I felt like, okay, like had a good run, but that was it. Like those were the glory days. And I really wanted to leave. I did. But I also felt like, well, shit, where else can I go now I have this passion for talking about dating. I can't go to another dating app. Like I'm not going to do that. And I like, there are so few places that I feel like I could enter into that would be a place that would support me and my creative endeavors in the way that I need it. And like, I mean, I literally think there were two companies that I would like check their job postings every day, and that was it. because those were the only two companies I felt like I could do what I wanted to at. But I also knew that the jobs I would want there are not jobs that would ever be on a job site. They're jobs I'd have to create for myself. And so I felt really stuck where I was like, I need to get out. I'm not doing well. And I want to be doing what I love and making a difference. And that's not happening here anymore. And I don't see it happening anymore. But I didn't know how to leave. I didn't know how to leave. And ultimately what ended up happening, and this is the big plot twist, was at the same time, I thought I had the most job security in the world. I was the face of the fucking brand on social media. Everyone knew me as Alana from Hinge.
Right.
I got let go.
Oh, my God.
They decided. So somebody new came in and didn't really believe that social media was the right thing and for the company. And since the day I left, there's not been a single thing posted on any of Hinge's social media. And it's been over a year. They wiped all the socials and it's not something they do anymore. So they decided to shut the entire content division down, which was, I say the entire content division, it was me and one other person. And we got let go out of nowhere, like fully blindsided. The most shocking, my friends thought I was joking. My parents thought I was joking, but it was the biggest relief in the world. Like an hour after the call happened, I felt like a 10,000 pound weight was lifted off of my shoulders. And like, I actually felt this sense of freedom and it was so empowering and felt so good. And I knew instantly that I did not want to go work for another company. I was like, you know what? I know what I want to do and I know how to do it.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to go do it.
I love that. I love that because, you know, it's so incredible that you turned this, what you could have looked at as a really negative thing that happened to you into a positive. And I'm sure that you went through the initial like shock and awe and you were like, man, this sucks. This blows. Right. Like, I mean, that's just human emotion, right? To be able to go through that. But then, you know, you have this initial, like that initial, like shock and awe, you know, like maybe even feeling a little bit bad for yourself. But then you get to a point where you're like, okay, now I can control my reaction to this. How am I going to look at it going forward? And you can either look at it as a negative thing or, you know, you can look at the silver lining of it. And it seems like you actually like really took the time to be with yourself and say like, wow, I feel relieved. Like I have this relief and I can actually now go do the thing that I wanted to do all along and I can do it on my own. What was it about that realization that gave yourself the permission to go become a creator? Because even if you you know, are relieved that you got let go from this other job, right? Like my initial instinct would have been, okay, let's look for a new job. Right. What gave you the confidence or the permission, you know, to go become a creator?
I think the main thing was that between the time of the end of Dating Sucks season one, which I guess ended in May of 2020, and the day I got let go, at which point like Dating Sucks season two was in production. Like that entire time I was like, why are we even taking a break? Like I have so many ideas. I have so many people I want to bring on as guests. There are so many topics that we need to cover. Like I could just have kept doing this. Like I could just be doing this and putting out a new episode every week. And so I had such an itch to just do it again. Like that's all I wanted to do for so long. And I mean, I went to the head of HR and I was like, can I start a podcast? And she was like, yes. And I was like, can it be about dating? And she was like, yes. And I was like, okay. And I just made sure that it was something that I could do. And I was like, okay, you know what? I'm going to give myself like 6 months to figure it out and see if I can make this work and see if I can figure out how to be a podcaster, be a content creator, be a freelancer on my own. And if I can make it work, I don't expect to make the same amount of money that I was my first year in it. But if I can make it work, if I can pay the bills and not feel like my quality of life is being threatened, then let's do it. And I did take like a full month and a half off before actually releasing the first episode of Seeing Other People, which came out the first week of January 2021. Yeah. I took a month and a half to really decompress and like get myself back to the right headspace where I was so excited about it and feeling good and feeling energized. I mean, I think I just like literally went through colored every day. Like my friend sent me an adult coloring book, which is what a friend sent her when she got let go from her job. And she said it was like her saving grace. And so she sent me one and it became my thing. I like colored all of my emotions out about like the last year at this job and how I felt about being let go and all the changes that happened and feeling creatively stunted. I colored it all out over a month and a half and it was amazing. And then I was like, okay, I'm good. I'm back.
That's incredible. I have never, ever received an adult coloring book, and you're making me want to now. Like,
you need it. It also is a curse word coloring book, which made it even better.
That's great. You're coloring in your emotions of just, I'm just thinking like of F-bombs and just like other. That's awesome.
Exactly.
I love that. I love that. It's like gamifying curses. That's awesome. Yep. We're coming up on time here, and I have a couple more questions for you. But before we get to those, Ilana, I just wanted to acknowledge you for being incredibly vulnerable, authentic, as we know you are through your story. And just really just bringing a lot of just life experience and just really just sharing what kind of is true to you and, just bringing that to this conversation. So I really appreciate it. And I hope that, our listeners appreciate it as much as I do, because, there's really something special about the way that you are just able to throw yourself and your personal experiences, kind of just put everything out there while also being respectful at the same time. And I just think that, a lot of people could learn from that communication style. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you for giving me a place to talk about it and really share what I've experienced and what I've learned. And I think everything that you're doing is amazing and exactly what people need.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. So I've got two more questions for you. The first is, what is the biggest thing that you have learned in the last year since you've become a creator?
Oh, my God. So I'm struggling with something right now where I'm really starting to monetize my content and my podcasts. And it's like almost like a form of imposter syndrome where like brands are offering me deals and they're offering me like a lot of money for 60-second ads in my podcast. And it's like, I literally have sat on two offers for the last 6 days and have not said yes, because I feel like it's wrong for me to. For some reason. I don't know why. Wow. I have no idea why. I've worked all year to build this audience, to do this so that I can really make it work and get to that next level. And absolutely. I'm just like, okay, but why do they want to like give me this money? And like, why do I deserve it? And like, is it wrong for me to say yes? And it's like, no, like recognize your worth and what you've created and that there is value to it, not just for the people who are watching it and listening to it, but for other people who are trying to reach those people. And let that happen. Like, actually accept that, because you did work for it and you did earn it.
What's your advice for someone that is where you were a year ago, that wants to make this leap from either their job or maybe somebody that even hasn't started creating content on social media yet, but they have this dream of building an audience and becoming a creator and joining that creator economy? What is your advice to them?
Start doing it while you still have a paying job. Like, do it and learn all of the skills and make the contacts and network and really figure out exactly what it is while you still have a job. Like, don't quit your day job until you're really ready to. Because, like I said, like, had I freelanced and done content when I first wanted to and my parents were like, you're not ready, like, they were so right. I was not ready. Yeah. And thank God I went through those next years and learned so much about the business world and about like the behind the scenes of content creation and how brands interpret it and stuff before I actually did it.
That's incredible. And I think that, you know, having that experience is something that a lot of people don't think about before they actually decide to go out on their own. I did lie. I actually had three questions for you. That one came up out of the blue. Last question, I promise, is how do you define growth?
Growth. Recognizing that it's okay for things to change, for people to change, for you to change, and that it's okay to make mistakes as long as you learn something from them. And you're going to make mistakes, and that's amazing because you're going to learn so much. So allow yourself to make those mistakes and don't be hard on yourself when you do, because it's all part of the process.
Awesome. I couldn't have said it any better myself. Ilana Dunn, thank you so much for being here with us today. And I hope to get to be able to talk to you soon. If people want to find out more about you or watch the podcast, etc., where should they go?
Yeah, well, again, thank you, Dan, so much for having me. It has been such an honor to be here. You can find me everywhere at Ilana Dunn. It's I-L-A-N-A-D-U-N-N. And the podcast is Seeing Other People. And it's also everywhere at Seeing Other People and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Awesome. Ilana, thank you so much. And I hope to get you on the podcast at some point again in the future.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Hey guys, thank you so incredibly much for listening to today's episode. It means the world to me, and I'm so grateful for any member of this audience. If you found today's episode valuable, go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever it is that you're listening to this show. Subscribe to the show, rate us 5 stars, and drop us a review if you can. It would mean the world to me. Remember, you are valuable, you are worthy, and you are already enough. Now let's go out there and grow together.